ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
As America marks 250 years of independence from Britain, join me, Nick Bryant, for an exploration of the country's origin story and what's happened since.
This is the beginning of the time when human beings were no longer subjects, but citizens.
From the Declaration of Independence to the presidency of Donald Trump, join me for our America 250 series on Saturday Extra. Search for Saturday Extra on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today you're joining me with author and popular Play School presenter, Rachel Coops, to explore why it's so hard to forgive, why it's not what you think it is, and how it can be good for your health to try. Hey, welcome to Big Ideas. I'm Natasha Mitchell.
Adam Goods, beautiful human being. Yeah. I approached him because I said, if anyone is positioned to understand forgiveness, it's you. You know, 2013, the booing incident that went on for so long, if anyone is placed to speak about it, he is. I love that he used to carry around a piece of paper, and he still has it, his entire career, that said, I am able to forgive. And he was given it when he was a young man, and he still has it to this day. And he says he has to look at it. He'll see it in his drawer at home, or he'll see it somewhere. And he says it gives him more energy to do the work that's important.
But of course, when you've been hurt by someone, forgiveness can feel like a big ask, can't it? Even impossible. And sometimes it's just not appropriate. Forgiveness may be hard work, but so too is hanging on to hurt, to hate, to a grudge, which can eat away at us, keep us tethered to that original harm, with all sorts of consequences for our well-being, our relationships, and our capacity to really live to our full potential. Rachel Coops is an actor for screen and stage, an award-winning storyteller, writer, yoga and mindfulness teacher. She's also a hero of children and grown-ups everywhere for her role as presenter of Play School on ABC TV. Her latest book is called The Art of Forgiveness, Let Go, Find Peace. And she joins me at the Make Good Festival, which is an annual gathering dedicated to ideas for better living. It happens at Bundanon in New South Wales on the banks of the beautiful Shoalhaven River at the home of late artists Arthur and Yvonne Boyd, now an art museum and a venue, on the traditional lands of the Dharawal and Dirga people. So join us for this rich conversation about a complicated act. Wow, what a book. And what a time for it to land. You write about this time of polarisation off the back of COVID, off the back of world wars that have also cleaved open family and friendships in difficult ways here in Australia. Do you feel that this is an extraordinary moment for this book to land?
Yeah, and I started writing during COVID. I wrote an article about forgiveness, 2,000-word article. And I was like, oh, this is a rabbit hole worthy of going down deeper that one can't go down in 2,000 words. At the time, as you alluded to, I work in the space of mindfulness and yoga as well as the creative space. Mm. And I just was witnessing people who had been friends for decades suddenly loathing one another and falling out over things that a year prior we could never have imagined, vaccine mandates and lockdowns and who should die or not. Mm. And in the micro, just this stage of life, I think I was watching a lot of friends go through bitter divorces and losses of family or creative projects or businesses falling apart because of what was happening in the world. So in the micro and the macro, I saw this complete polarisation and an inability to move on from things that felt like, you know, I watched people spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in court to then come out with no money, to just torture each other. And So I started to think a lot about forgiveness and how one does it in a complex world. And then, of course, I mean, that was a few years ago. So now we find ourselves at a time where I think it's even more than I had ever imagined. Things have worsened and there is less nuance and less conversation and less ability to listen to one another. Mm. And so, yeah, it's more timely than even when I first started.
You could have ever imagined. And another observation you make, which I found interesting, is this rise in perfectionism. I mean, maybe that's also emerging out of COVID for a lot of young people too, that kind of sense of control that they need. You know, we've got to keep things in control, and perfectionism is a part of that in some sense. And at the heart of perfectionism too is this sense that we find it hard to be forgiving of ourselves, but also we have high expectations of other people that we in a sense, we lack a sense of forgiving for others around us.
Yeah, and now when they look at the stats of the rise of perfectionism in young people, they can correlate it, among many other things, to the rise in the mental health epidemic in our young people. And part of it, yes, is social media and all of that, but I can't imagine growing up now. We talked about this earlier, just as being a Gen Xer. I mean, I grew up parentless. We really just had free reign, but I wasn't immersed in the chaos of the world. I think we were let free in a lot of ways to learn resilience, but then we didn't have access to a lot of other stuff. Mm. I just don't know that you need to when you're 6, 7, 8 years of age. So whatever they can control, and we're seeing this more and more, is becoming in a world where there is no control for them, and they're looking at the planet dying and the world being apocalyptic. Of course, that desire to control what you can is becoming increasingly problematic.
So speaking of being a Gen Xer, fellow Gen Xer, yeah, we parented ourselves to a great extent. I certainly did. It was pretty radical. And there are traumas associated with that. And so let's come to some of your experiences that also, because this isn't just about responding to the bigger global moment. Mm. This is also very personal for you. Mm. And thinking back to the sorts of resentments or frustrations or grievances that we hold about how we have been parented, how we might parent ourselves. Mm. Is that part of what led you to forgiveness as well? Forgiveness something you found easy to do?
Yeah, a big impetus for me was I was brought up by a teenage single mum at a time when, it was the 80s. So it was, in many ways, I had a blessed childhood because we could run around in national parks and safely come home at 8 o'clock at night and drink out of the hose and all the rest of it. But I definitely grew up going, I saw how hard my mum worked, and I didn't like going between two houses, and I was like, I'm never going to do that. So I spent a lot of my 20s just trying to get relationships right. And of course, we know how that goes. And in the end, I fell pregnant in my late 30s and ended up pregnant, separated from my partner, and living the life I had really tried to avoid my entire life. And I held a lot of grief for a very long time about that. And I feel like through layers I worked through, my son's dad and I have had this incredible kind of growth, but no separations. It was not a, what does Gwyneth call it? What did she call it? Like consciously uncoupling.
Yes,
we did not consciously uncouple.
No.
It was more like Game of Thrones, if anyone has seen that show. And so, we've had a journey, but the further I go along, I'm constantly, how do I let go of more, and how do I let go of more, and how do I oh my God, I'm still angry about this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that situation. I definitely had to make peace with that situation. But I think making peace with so many things, and after all these decades, 30 years of meditating and breath practice and like yoga, and I still sit down and this same...
Still hanging
oh
on.
Oh my God.
To the anger.
Know, watching the thoughts and I'm like, there they are again. And I can laugh at myself now and go, wow, you're still angry about that. But I was... compelled to talk to people, I think, to say, well, how do you do it? People who have been through far, far more unforgivable situations than myself. And what I found through that process was that humans are incredible, incredibly resilient, and everyone I spoke to, I was just, I bow down to you in your capacity. But there were people I spoke to your point earlier, who had agreed to speak to me, and then we got to the moment of having the conversation, or we had the conversation, and then they said, I've changed my mind, and having had that conversation, I feel different. Or I had, you know, one person in particular who lost her son, who I was very close to. He was a great love of mine, and I was going to talk to her, and she just said to me, I can't, because I feel like as time has gone on, and it was a long time ago now, it was the Bali bombings, and she said that the longer time goes on, the more I go, what was that all for? It's almost like she was so forgiving in the moment. I was blown away as a young person. I learned a lot from her, but as time has gone on, the grief has got.
So the act of forgiveness is hard, but even talking about forgiveness is hard.
Yeah. Mm. And also I think it got, everyone I spoke to was like, oh, have I forgiven?
you also make the point that the greatest lessons that you've learnt in your life have often been from people that you've found impossible to forgive.
Oh, yeah. That's where... And I quite like it when I have an aversion to someone now, because aversion is like... it's rarer and rarer. And aversion is the beginning of hatred, or it's the beginning of resentment. So when I catch myself, there's so much self-knowledge in it, because I'm like,
so
wow,
true.
Here we go.
Why isn't forgiveness what most of us think it is?
So I feel like I had perceived it as, oh, it's letting someone off the hook. And I think a lot of people feel like it's letting someone off the hook. Justice hasn't been done, when in fact there are so many ways to do it that have nothing to do with it. In fact, it has nothing to do with the other person. It's about your own freedom. Now, I want to...
You might never even speak to the other person.
You might never even speak to the other person. And I do always want to add to this conversation that let's take psychopaths and immense injustice out, because that is a whole other thing, and I fear there are many layers and many things to work through.
Survivors of abuse.
Yeah. Mm. And you know, I spoke to a survivor in the book who she's incredible, but that's not everyone's journey. So across the board though, the key thing is that to free your own mind, you will, and this is not me, this is the neuroscience and, I mean, all ancient perspectives have been talking about it forever, but the neuroscience shows it, heart health, all the studies they're looking at now for physical health. It's you who suffers. It's I'm the one who is getting sick. And I saw that too in holding on to resentment for so many years. I had chronic fatigue. I got so unwell. I had to stop working for a few months because I thought I was letting go of things, and I absolutely was not. So it just frees us. And sometimes there's a boundary that has to be set. That's part of the forgiveness. Sometimes, yes, moving away geographically, far, far away from someone is the forgiveness. So that was the biggest surprise, I think, through all the research.
And there's something incredibly liberating about that idea, isn't there? That forgiveness doesn't have to be about the person that's caused you harm. It actually starts with you, and it can end with you.
Mm.
On ABC Radio National's Big Ideas podcast everywhere, Natasha Mitchell joining you from the Make Good Festival at Bundanon in rural New South Wales, with Rachel Coops, who's a writer, yoga and mindfulness teacher. She's also a longtime presenter of ABC TV's popular kids show Play School. Rachel's new book is called The Art of Forgiveness. And the Radio National text line, if you have thoughts about blockages or the growth around forgiving someone in your own life, I'd love to hear from you. 0418 226 576, or you can email us, bigideas@abc.net.au.
Let's touch on the health impacts. Mm. You did an incredible amount of research into all the literature around forgiveness, and there are some really interesting pieces of research. But what do we understand about the health impacts, both mental and physical? And the body is one thing, isn't it? So really they're combined. Of holding on to hurts, anger, grief, grievance.
Yeah, there are so many. And I think more and more now we have a deeper understanding of what a lot of many different mindfulness practices have told us for a long time. And the realm of psychology has said, if you regulate yourself, you will be well. And so part of it is what's happening in the limbic system when we go into fight, flight, and then freeze was added in the 90s. That idea of when the amygdala sends not so happy messages to the brain instead of the feel good serotonin and dopamine from good experiences, when we keep ruminating and we trigger that part of the limbic system so that we go into fight, flight or freeze, the amygdala sends not so happy chemicals, we flood the body with epinephrine, which we know as adrenaline. The heart, the lungs, basically every single physiological system in your body is impacted.
So even the thought of a harm holds us to that hypervigilant state.
Yes, and there was a study done where they put mice with a bully. The little mouse would stop doing mouse things and go into fight, flight or freeze. And long after the bully mouse was taken out, the little mouse stayed in that same state. So we know the impacts. They stay for a long period of time. For some people, they stay for 20 years because we keep ruminating on the same stuff. So on a physiological level, that's happening. In terms of cognitive health, and there's a lot of work now being done around stress and cortisol and dementia, because they're recognising that the cognitive decline that comes from the consistent release of cortisol when we ruminate on negative things or people or events, that it even lowers the volume of your brain. Like there is a direct link between cortisol and your brain volume. It impacts memory, the speed at which you can process information. So
we need cortisol. It's a vital hormone. It keeps us alert to the world, but it also has this flip side that if we're constantly in a high cortisol state.
Yeah, we're not meant to be in it all the time.
Disease implications
too. And the immune system. The brain's connected to the immune system. So we know that when those systems, when you're in fight, flight or freeze, the immune system, you don't need your immune system. You need to run. So those longer term protective systems get switched off. So it's directly related to the immune system. Yeah.
So if there's a reason to let go of those things, to forgive, it's a health reason. It's a health reason.
Yeah.
I guess to give a sense of some examples that you explore in this book, and you have some really rich conversations with people, it really took you on quite a journey. I can imagine where these conversations took you into incredibly emotional terrain, but incredibly hopeful terrain. There are two people in the book that really stand out for me, Simi and Matt, one of your colleagues on Play School, who has also gone on this incredible trajectory.
Yeah. So Simi, I actually met at another book event. She's one of those people who's just so present and alive and radiates goodness. And she's a survivor of familial abuse. And she tells her story in the book. And I feel like I won't tell too much about it, except to say
about
her mum.
And she escaped eventually.
She escaped, but her point was she was 17 and she had to leave home and escape that abuse to begin the process of healing. And from afar, from that distance, she could start forgiving her mum, forgiving, she says, you know, I forgave my mum, but more importantly, I forgave her soul. And in doing that, it freed my soul. But my favourite thing about her story is she says it's the act of having kids and it stopped with me. Because she understood why her mum was in so much suffering and pain. She understood that from a logical brain perspective. So she could have a sense of empathy and at the same time, this ends with me. The cycle ends not only from me stepping out, but my kids have freedom. They will not. This will not go on.
I think she says forgiveness is like a grain of sand.
This is my favourite.
It becomes a sandstorm.
Forgive like a grain of sand. She talks about do it in tiny little layers because it becomes a sandstorm.
Mm. And Matt grew up with an experience that many have. He loved primary school.
Mm.
High school was like a living hell. What happened to him?
So Matt Backer again, he's just, I mean, I love all the presenters, but when I present with Matt, he's very fun. We will find a joke in nothing. And he finds comedy in everything. So we connect over that. We both have a pretty dark sense of humour. And he, of course, was school captain in primary school, charismatic, you know, young gay Brisbane boy.
Happy joy.
He's awesome. Gets to high school, young gay man in a boys' Catholic school, small, not athletic, didn't have a great time. And he said that.
Horrifying.
It was, yeah,
relentless.
He said.
Bullying.
Horrendous bullying, but, and this was, I think, really crucial because this is what many people who I spoke to, their experience is. What it does when you're bullied and told you're disgusting and you're wrong, your very existence is wrong, at a pivotal time of your life when you're young, so for 5 years, every day he's told that he is not human, that it erodes your sense of self. And he just left school not knowing who he was. And he held on to this unconscious grudge towards his bullies that took until his late 20s to manifest into panic attacks. And this real sense of just not knowing who he was. He was an actor. He was quite a successful actor, but still felt like the acting industry was not very embracing of who he was. And it was going through that process of going, wow, I'm not coping in my life. I'm about to turn 30. And that's when he realised it was all going back to not being able to forgive and let go.
How did he make that discovery? Like, where did forgiveness take him?
He frames it that he started to see them as young people not knowing who they were as well. That was the first step. The other thing is he's an artist. So he recently made a film about it, a short film which actually did really well called Die, Bully, Die. And it was...
Which could be one
or
solution.
Or is it Die, Bully? Is it Die, Bully, Die or Die, Bully? I forget. Which could be a solution.
Sorry. Dark humour.
That's what the film is about.
What you wish.
And that's what it's about. It's about having a date with your high school bully many years later. And then, you know, fantasising about different ways to kill them. So he made art about it, but he also says it happened in layers through starting to connect with who he really was and find himself and have a sense of self that they stripped away. And that came up a lot speaking to people was when you connect to yourself and you know who you are, it's much easier to do so. But when your bullies have stripped that away, it's really hard.
Speaking of Die, Bully, Die, there's a great quote that I think comes from Alcoholics Anonymous in your book, and that is, resentment is like drinking the poison and waiting for your enemy to die.
Waiting for the other person to die.
Waiting for the other person to die.
Yeah. It's very disputed where that quote comes from, but it's known now through AA predominantly.
You also, being a yogi... and a meditation teacher, you also lean into all sorts of different philosophical, spiritual, religious traditions in this book and look at how forgiveness has been thought about and is thought about and is practiced in those traditions. What did you find? Many things.
Many. Oh my, what did I find?
Buddhism
many
is an
things.
Interesting place to start because you spent a lot of time reading Buddhist texts.
Yeah, that's what I first found. I was very lucky. I had substantial mental health issues when I was younger, and a psychiatrist gave me books and medication, but books on Buddhism, and introduced me to a Western Tibetan nun, Pema Chodron, and her work.
Amazing.
So I was very lucky to find that when I was younger. But one of my favourite things about Buddhism is they talk about Shenpa. And Shenpa is that moment where we've all had this. You're talking to someone, you're having a conversation, it's going really well, and then suddenly either you feel it, like they've just said something, and you pull away and the conversation is kind of done. And conversely, you're talking to someone and you're having this great chat and you just see it in their eyes. It's like there's an aversion. Something's happened. The conversation is over and it's us pulling away for some reason. And as I said earlier, aversion is so interesting because sometimes it's there for a reason, to keep you safe and to say, yeah, this person is energetically or physically or for some reason you need to get away from them. But sometimes it's an inability to see difference, or I disagree inherently with what you are saying in such a powerful way that I'm just shut off from having a conversation with you. And that's just how we are living at the moment.
That rigidity of thinking is also a way in which we can never imagine forgiving.
Yeah, and it's there to keep us safe. As I said, and Matt Bakker talked about that as in terms of being bullied, you have to be angry. You have to be angry. It keeps you safe. It gives you energy so you can survive the unsurvivable. And then at some point it stops being helpful. So I think it's the same for that. Noticing when we have resentment towards someone, it's changing into this kind of hardening. And then every time then that happens with another person, similar, and we harden again. And so we all just become in our little cones of what we believe in, and then there's nothing else outside of that.
Which is why it's interesting to think that religious traditions do have, from Christianity, Islam, that they all have forgiveness as elements. But in
every
fact,
every single one.
But in fact, you could argue that religion is also a barrier to forgiveness. You know, it increases a sense of tribalism, and kind of sort of entrenching back into your beliefs and not being open or porous to other people's beliefs.
Mm.
Fascinating sort of tension there. But in Buddhism, there's also this notion that attachments can cause suffering.
Mm.
And we stay attached to grief, loss, hurt, pain, anger.
Mm. And then we just live our life in this ping pong of I'm going to move away from the things that and people that I don't like, and I'm going to move towards the people and the things that I do like, which is natural and human. But yes, Pema Chodron used to say, lean into the needle. Like you lean into the experience of what's happening in the moment, the grief and the anger, and the so that it doesn't stay, so that we are able to constantly let go of stuff. And that was probably my biggest discovery across the board, was forgiveness is not something you do. You don't forgive someone. It is a practice that
a muscle.
It's a muscle that we have to use every day. Road rage is a great place. Your kids getting dressed. My 13-year-old son losing things every 5 minutes. Like at the swimming carnival, goggles before the first race. How? Like that constant, let go, let go, let go. That I think that's for me what I've come full circle.
Easier
that's
said
all it
than
is.
Done.
I know.
So this is where you then take us on a journey into the process of forgiving.
Mm.
There's giving, there's giving up, and there's letting go. Start with the giving and giving up.
So everything in nature is reciprocity. So there's always a giving and a receiving. There were some interesting conversations I had around what are you willing to give up, whether you're on the receiving or the giving end, in order to have more peace in your life. Like, are you willing to let go of that attachment to the anger that maybe is making you powerful right now and it's going to make you vulnerable? Giving an apology. There is lots of research that shows it is much easier to forgive someone if an apology is given. One of the five tenets of reconciliation in Australia is accountability, that we own the past, we say what happened, and we say it's never going to happen again. Like that accountability piece. But you don't always get that, to the point you made earlier. Sometimes the other person doesn't even know about this process.
Yeah, apologies are tricky, aren't they? Because they're hard to do, because they take a sense of trust that the other person is ready to receive your apology, or that they might accept your apology. They may not. They may be oblivious to the harms that they've done, or what you're feeling, because you've never articulated it. And so they may react. They may push back. Mm. They may deny. Tricky, the act of apology.
Yeah, and I think there has to be readiness. There's a lot, especially in the world of psychology, they talk about there has to be readiness.
Mm.
So all fine and well if I want to apologise, if I'm ready to apologise, but if the person on the receiving end is not there yet, they're not there yet. I can't force my apology. Oh, well, I've done my piece in this process. And, yeah, I think sometimes we complicate the apology. We go, oh, I don't want to apologise because maybe it makes me accountable for more than I feel like I should be accountable for. There's a lot of that as well.
Mm.
And there's humility in owning, I messed up. Back to the perfectionism point. Everyone in this room has messed up, and we're going to mess up
guaranteed.
And we're going to mess up again and again and again. That's the reality. And yet there's this reluctance to forgive ourselves for doing so all the time, or see it in ourselves. And then also, then everyone around us is going to mess up.
But often the lack of an apology is what stops people from forgiving.
Mm.
They haven't said sorry. If they say sorry, then I might forgive them. They haven't acknowledged the hurt they've caused me, so therefore I'm going to stay angry until they apologise, and they never will apologise.
Mm.
So do you think that forgiveness has to happen independent of, well, obviously you do, of any kind of an apology, any kind of an acknowledgement?
Two truths in the one place. That is, it is absolutely easier to do it when there is an apology. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the time it's not going to come. So it's up to me to determine. And not only is it not going to come, some people will just pull the same stupid thing again. And I there are times when I let stuff go knowing that there's going to be a behaviour that's going to happen again, and how many times will I be willing to let it happen again?
Mm.
It's not about being a doormat, but at the same time, if I want someone in my life, if I choose to have them in my life and I know they're going to keep messing up in the same ways that make me crazy, and there are people in my family that is very true of, who I love deeply, but I want them in my life. So I have to give them more leeway that I would give a lot of other people. So, and it requires me to forgive all the time.
So the giving and giving up.
Yes.
We have to give up something sometimes to receive
something. That's the universal deal, is if you want something, that's one of the only universal deals I know to be true. Well, I believe to be true. I don't know anything. I believe to be true that if you want something in life, you have to give something else up. You can't have everything at once. If I want to exercise, that fundamentally is going to require me not having chai and with my girlfriend instead, if that's the only hour of my weekend I have to do something for myself as a busy working single mum. That's the deal. So, yes, I believe that you have to give something up in the process from both sides.
Rachel Coops explores the art of forgiveness in her new book. She's with me on Big Ideas on ABC Radio National and ABC Listen from the stage of the 2026 Make Good Festival at Bundanon in New South Wales. More tools, more tensions about the act and art of forgiveness to come.
There's another idea about how you think about the person who's done you harm. And I just don't have the immediate word, but it's something like, and so maybe this is part of the letting go as well, is thinking about that other person in a neutral way.
Neutrality.
Stripping the emotion out of how you think about them, how they occupy your mind.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So one of the four keys of, well, it's across Buddhism and a lot of the yogic texts, this idea of Maitri, in loving kindness for everyone no matter what. And then there is this idea of neutrality towards the wicked that particularly appears in yogic texts. And it upsets a lot of people for obvious reasons. It's often translated as apathy.
Rather than righteous anger about injustice.
Correct. So the neutrality is, from my perspective, where I'm at right now, at this moment in this room, because it'll change again as I grow and learn from my experience. The neutrality is this moment of aversion something that I have to get angry about and self-righteous about and take action in the world and align it with my purpose? Or is it a moment of learning for me about myself and that person? And then the self-knowledge is, what do I do with that? Do I move away from them? Do I set a boundary? Is there a difficult conversation to be had? And on it goes. But the neutrality is around, it's not like I have no feelings, I'm apathy, I don't care. It's, am I just looking through the smudged lenses of my glasses all the time, which is my inherent experience in this world? I'm a Gen Xer. I see everything through the lens of my experiences. I don't see it through the lens of anyone else here. I can only see it through my experience. Mm. So am I seeing things clearly? Seeing things as they are. That's what Anais Nin said. You know, we don't see the world as it is. We see it as we are. So the neutrality is around getting very clear, is this true or not? Is this person as someone evil and I need to remove something from them? If they've got a dog and they're kicking the dog, do I go, oh, I'm neutral. I don't feel anything. I don't feel apathy. I love this man. No. I'm neutral from the perspective of there is an act I need to intervene and I will intervene. But if I go round and round in my head for years about that man and I don't take action, oh, did I do the right thing? Or if I hate him for the rest of my life and I obsess and ruminate, which I have done about things, that's what I'm talking about letting go of. The neutrality is seeing clearly. That's how I perceive it, yeah.
Mm.
Not always seeing through my biases, yeah.
The Stoics come up a few times in the book. Why? Stoic philosophers.
There's something about their obsession with virtue, as in just figure out what your ethics and values are. Like, what do you believe in? Because if you figure that out and you live aligned to that, there is nothing to forgive. But when we are out of alignment with that, like beautiful Matt, or when we feel a little bit lost, it's easy to get hooked into things. When you know, this is what I believe in, this is my purpose, it's much clearer to know where your boundaries are, what your lines in the sand are, what is right, what is wrong. And I think in the world today that's very challenging. And the Stoics speak a lot about that. In, you know, other practices they'd call it dharma, purpose. But that also, dharma and purpose can also mean your meaning, obtaining meaning in the small things, in the everyday things. And also you don't get to choose your dharma. You don't get to choose your purpose always. Sometimes the sandwich generation are caring for elder parents and smaller kids and there's a lot of resentment around that because they haven't chosen it. So living with ease in your current purpose or dharma, what you're meant to be doing with your life right now, it's not always, oh, I'm living a life of meaning, I'm exactly where I dreamed I'd be.
Dream on. Sometimes we can't speak the words about forgiveness. I think we've acknowledged that it can just be hard to do. So you also offer some really interesting tools where we can kind of let go of the entrapment, the rigidity, the burden that forgiveness could do for us physically, using physical tools, all sorts of physical tools, and that's fascinating in the book. Tell us about those.
So as I alluded to earlier, I'm obsessed with regulation and the polyvagal theory.
Not political government regulation.
No.
You're talking about emotional regulation.
Emotional regulation. And this is why so many ancient practices, I think, gave us tools to do it, because it can help us in those moments when we feel very, I hate the word triggered when it's not used correctly, but I'm not thinking of another one in this moment. We feel hooked into feeling that. The vagus nerve is this incredible nerve that goes through most of your organs. It controls somewhere between 70 to 85% of your nervous system. And because it runs through all your organs, affects a lot of your physiology. So there's a lot of practices that just tone the vagus nerve. Singing, humming, breath practices. And if we're doing things that tone that nerve, you're kind of controlling your nervous system a lot of the time. And then there's so many other practices, whether it is meditation, yoga, swimming. I started doing EMDR through the process of the nods in the room.
Just explain what that is for people.
EMDR is bilateral stimulation of the brain, because this psychology student many years ago played in the park with looking left to right and found that it changed her memories. So she went into studying whether there was any accuracy to this and found that there was. So it's, you can do it with vibration between hands. You can look side to side. I've done all the different ways, and it's really powerful. And they're using it in many different areas now. A lot of PTSD patients are having substantial shift that where medication has not helped. So things like that didn't exist 20 years ago. There's new practices that, and it's back to that body-mind connection. I had a sound healing at the book launch, just a 5-minute sound healing, and there were lots of different kinds of people. It was not this kind of festival. It was in Bondi, so lots of different people at the book launch and who were like, sound healing, what is this? And at the end, after a few people, one of my very high-performing
corporate
friend came up to me. She was like, oh, that was amazing. Yeah. What was that thing? And I'm like, yes, sometimes when you try a completely new modality that you have never thought of, something shifts that otherwise hasn't. So a lot of people said, yeah, it wasn't until I did this extra little thing that was, it shifted something in me forever.
Yeah. Where does self-forgiveness fit into this story? It's a hard one.
It's a hard one.
What does it look and feel like? And why does it matter?
I believe that you cannot forgive others until you forgive yourself. But I've had conversations with other people who have shone a different light on that and convinced me a little bit of otherwise. When you are really tough on yourself and you have a rigor around your expectations of yourself, very often that transpires to how much wriggle room we give everyone else. Not always. What we do know is that looking at those later years of life and fear of death, for example, there was a study done that showed those who didn't have regret had a much more peaceful journey towards that process of leaving this body. That to me is fascinating. There's something around not having regret, just forgiving yourself and forgiving yourself for the mistakes you make, the choices you made that didn't work out.
For not living the life that you might have imagined, all of those things.
Yes. And the other thing that the research shows is where it's easier to, the harder things to regret are the things that we didn't do. So to me, that's a great impetus to like live your life, do the thing and make the mistake, because it's easy to let go of regret about mistakes than it is to let go of like not doing the thing. Do the thing. Do the thing, mess up, make a mess. Everyone else is. No one has any idea what they're doing. Everyone is causing harm in the world unintentionally. We hurt people without meaning to. And a lot of the time we...
And we're not trained how to not hurt people sometimes.
Well, Gen Xers weren't.
No, we weren't. I think
my son's so trained about all this stuff. We were talking earlier. This new generation have all this language.
It's a whole other world. Yeah.
Yes. I'm like, make the mistakes. It's a great lesson. Do the thing.
What if you can't do the thing that is forgiveness? And then that becomes... Sometimes I wonder whether the push to forgive... And we've offered the caveat earlier that there are situations where forgiveness is not appropriate, but then the forgiveness becomes an exercise on helping you let go of the pain. But what if there becomes a sort of toxic expectation around forgiveness, and then that manifests as, well, I can't, even if it's not a severe abuse situation, but it's a relationship that, you know, say two siblings haven't spoken to each other for decades and they can't break through, they can't forgive, it's just too hard. But then there becomes a sort of sense of guilt or shame that somehow they just can't do it, and everyone in the family wants them to. Christmas has become hellish because they can't spend time in the same room with each other. So does that become a sort of toxic expectation too, that this expectation that we should forgive if it's possible?
I don't think you can ever, like, for example, to expect a victim to be in a room with an abuser, we would never expect, right? That would be an unrealistic expectation. In the same way, to expect someone to be somewhere they feel unsafe, I think the question is always...
I mean, we've seen incredible situations at Truth and Reconciliation Commissions. I read an incredible book by Pumla Gobodo-Madikizela. She was on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission with Desmond Tutu. It's the most phenomenal book on forgiveness I've ever read, because it was about sitting with the chief perpetrators, the people who demanded that burning tyres be put around people's necks. Mm. She sat in the company of this man for many conversations.
I found
forgiveness. Now, I don't have that. I wouldn't have that capacity.
No, me either.
Yeah. But she held court and space, I suppose, for this process, and maybe that was... And she's a psychologist, part of that was. But at a lighter level, though, what if...
Yeah. I do think about, you know, Adam Goods was one of my favourite conversations.
He's a beautiful subject in this book.
Beautiful human being. Yeah. And I approached him because I said, if anyone is positioned to understand forgiveness, it's you. I couldn't get hold of him, and I really wanted to, so I Instagrammed him. And I said, I'd met him in the dressing room in the makeup room at the ABC once, and I went all mute and shy and couldn't speak. And so I messaged him and said that I couldn't speak to you at the time, but I really, if anyone can add to this book, it's you. And he, you know, 2013, the booing incident that went on for so long, if anyone is placed to speak about it, he is. I love that he used to carry around a piece of paper and he still has it, his entire career, that said, I am able to forgive. And he was given it when he was a young man, and he still has it to this day. And he says he has to look at it, he'll see it in his drawer at home, or he'll see it somewhere. And he says it gives him more energy to do the work that's important.
Right. And there is the power of forgiving, because it actually then allows him to deploy his full self.
Yeah. And
to do meaningful work.
To do meaningful work. And maybe the energy that is taken up when we're in those situations they say, if you think you're enlightened, go and have dinner with your family. Right? Go have a holiday meal. But there's something in that. Where are we putting all of this mental energy? Are we putting it into holding on to that thing? If we are safe, I'm not suggesting anyone be in a situation that is unsafe. But if Adam Goods can do it with what he went through, and then his perspective is, wow, it just frees you up to have all of this mental energy to do, like, to make change, to be a leader, to be the leader you want to be, to be the parent you want to be.
A little piece of cardboard. Well, now that you've put all this mental energy into the theme of forgiveness to write this incredible book, where has it left you? Where are you sitting now with that, your relationship to forgiveness?
exactly
where you started.
Exactly where I started. From the perspective of, and I say this in the first chapter, I had a teacher, I've had a Sanskrit teacher for a long time now, nearly 20 years. And the first time I sat in a training with her, I was one of those people who always want to ask the questions, which you're not supposed to do. You're meant to sit with it and just take it all in and meditate on it. And I'd be like, but. And so I asked a question and she just sat there and said, "There's no wisdom in the answers, Rachel, only in the questions." And that's how I feel now.
Is there a question in the audience from you?
Yeah. Okay, I really enjoyed this this session, and I'm interested in your thoughts about the connection between forgiveness and kindness.
Beautiful question. Yeah, in both Buddhism and the yoga lineage, and pretty much every religion, there is different words for it, but like ahimsa, non-harming, is the premise. It underpins everything. And the more modern day understanding, because I went into the etymology of the word and the more modern definitions, one of them is connected to the idea of mercy, which is, it's even beyond kindness. It's like Adam Drake, who we didn't talk about, he's an incredible man who works in youth detention.
In Northern Territory.
In the Northern Territory. He started this program in Don Dale.
Working with young boys.
Young boys,
phenomenal
young men.
Work. He's a beautiful character in your book.
He's an amazing human. But he says, forget forgiveness, go straight to mercy, which is, let's celebrate the amazing person that you are. And I mean, that's a level of kindness and generosity that most of us don't have, which is, I think there's
self-kindness.
So this is
mercy for the other.
Mercy for the other person.
So this is saying, let's celebrate the perpetrator.
He is working with young men who have done some pretty, made big mistakes.
And have
self-forgiveness, absolutely, for them to forgive themselves. But for his work with them is, how do we celebrate you? How do we celebrate the fact that you are alive and that you've survived things that I couldn't survive? And that's how he continues to do that work, is like just have mercy. Mercy for self, mercy for others. It goes beyond compassion and kindness, actually. Mm. But most of us can't do that.
He makes the point that you really, forgiveness isn't enough. Mercy is really the ultimate stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll take one more question.
This question flows on. So we talk about Adam Good. So, you know, in some contexts, he goes on to perhaps convert the ignorant, because these racist comments are based on ignorance. And I know that people have gone into prisons, for example, meditation teachers, to help prisoners learn to meditate. So my question is, on the realms of mercy, should society be more forgiving and in the sense of second chances to people? I'm interested in your points on that.
So almost building a culture of forgiveness across a population.
Yeah, I think, and there's more conversation around that. The work that someone like Adam is doing is testament to that. And he fought so hard to get that program, because we worked together in Tennant Creek a long time ago, and he used to speak about it as a bit of a dream, and then he worked really hard to get it in. And what he does is called balanced theory, and it's physical activity, motivational quotes. So the boys bring in like a word or a quote. Sometimes it'll be forgive or something like that. And then they all share their understanding of it, and then they pick the best one, and that becomes their work for the week. And then they do things like meditation and theatre, because he has it. That's how we met, was in having a theatre background. So sharing story, and the thousands of lives he's impacted is really extraordinary. And the boys that he's turned, not he's turned around, they've
this
turned
is
themselves
your Northern
around.
Territory friend, yeah.
Yeah, the lives that have been turned around from giving the time and space for these young men to contemplate and not reoffend. And there's no data yet around numbers comparing the reoffence, but anecdotally, it's substantial. Mm. So absolutely.
And it also taps into cancel culture, this sort of...
We didn't even get to cancel culture.
People who are publicly shamed, shut down and careers ended and families... The consequences of cancel culture are profound. It's complex. We could talk about that a lot, but... there's nuances to cancel culture. It's also about people finding their voice, standing up for themselves against others and, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both sides.
Both sides. Wow. So not a little book in the slightest.
It's little, but it's not little.
It's a beautiful read, The Art of Forgiveness, Let Go, Find Peace by Rachel Coops. Have a wonderful festival. Please give it up for Rachel Coops.
Thank you.
I'm wondering how you're feeling after hearing that. Has being forgiven or forgiving another changed your life in some important way? I'd love to know. The Radio National text line, 0418 226 576, 0418 226 576, or email bigideas@abc.net.au. Rachel Coops, her new book is called The Art of Forgiveness, Let Go, Find Peace. She is a yoga and meditation teacher, longtime presenter of Play School on ABC television, and thanks to the whole team behind the terrific Make Good Festival at Bundanon in New South Wales. It was pretty magical. I'm Natasha Mitchell. Next on Big Ideas, writer and musician Anna Goldsworthy on The God We Made, The Threat and Promise of Artificial Intelligence.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.